And I was realizing that as other people were sharing too, whether on TikTok or Instagram or just sending me messages, like, I make my cookies or I make this dish to remember my lost loved one. And it's so beautiful. Food is just so powerful like that.
That's Rosie Grant, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Rosie Grant is a writer, researcher, and archivist whose work explores the intersections of archives, folklore, and family storytelling. She joins us to talk about To Die For, a cookbook of gravestone recipes. Rosie, welcome to Conversations.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Before we talk about the book itself, tell us about At Ghostly Archive and how that led to this book.
Well, this TikTok and Instagram account I started while working on my MLIS, my Master's in Library and Information Science degree. And it's an account that features cemeteries. And in the beginning, it was just general cemeteries. I was interning at a cemetery and I was learning a lot as I went. And in the process of that, I learned about recipes that were featured on people's memorials. So the account now basically just focuses on that and other interesting ways that people use food to remember someone.
So who do you see as the audience for this book? Because I can see it's for someone who enjoys a cookbook, but it's also bigger than that.
Yeah. I mean, when I first started, I actually didn't think there was much of an audience for cemetery folks. I wasn't aware of how big certain Facebook groups and other accounts were. Turns out people who like cemeteries, taphophiles, they call themselves, there are some Facebook groups with hundreds of thousands of people. There are some accounts that have over 1 million followers of people who are just interested in food and death. And I think for me, this particular book is for anyone who is thinking about grief and using food to connect with someone who they've lost. And then also preserving your own family foods and histories, whatever that looks like. I guess for everyone, we all have that recipe that we had as a kid that we still remember.
Well, in the first part of your book, you give people advice about how they can record their history regarding food and family. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, this is such a project born from an archivist background. I was getting a lot of food stories from people of like, oh, my mom died last year, and when I miss her, I wish I could make the cake that she made for all my birthdays, but I never got the recipe. Or I miss my dad. I wish I'd gotten his chili recipe and things like that. I've gotten so many stories. And so while it's a celebration of people who did share their recipe, it's also, for me, it was like a lesson of document your recipes while you can. They don't have to be on a gravestone. It's sometimes just a conversation with your loved ones or a community member, writing it down, maybe cooking it together, and sharing it with other people.
So tell us a bit about how this book is organized.
Yeah, so definitely not your average cookbook. When I was putting it together, I was like, well, we'll see what we have here. But it starts with an introduction to the project and just kind of how this all got started. And then it goes into, yes, community archiving and personal archiving of documenting your own recipes. A little bit of how to do personal archiving. I tried to make it as accessible as possible, not too long of a list. And then, yeah, it gets into the recipes. And so definitely there's a lot of desserts and baked goods. And so it's broken down into smaller sections from there. We have a couple outliers. We have an ice cream one. We have an Irish coffee. And then at the end, we have savory recipes. And so each one has, of course, the recipe, the how to cook the recipe, and then a story about each person.
Tell us about how you researched these recipes and the people that you highlight in the book.
Yeah, each one a fairly organic process. So in the beginning, I was learning about these different memorials around the world, and I would learn about them from either a local news item or a blog post or on social media. So basically, they were already famous before I even came along. They'd been featured on the news or they'd gone viral on Facebook or things like that. In particular, there were three women named Naomi Kay and Maxine who were like very well featured. And then after that, it came to finding their obituaries, and a lot of online archives are pretty easy to find people's obituaries. Finding their find a grave, which is sort of like the Wikipedia of cemeteries. And then from there, using both sources to contact the families. In some really lovely cases, I heard from the families themselves. They would reach out directly. And so I would just get to set up an interview with them. In other cases, it would be messaging folks on Facebook or on Instagram and just being like, hey, I have this project. Could I include your loved one? And, you know, the process took about 4 years to reach out to the 40 families. And then, you know, usually one phone call would turn into like, well, you have to talk to my cousin or you have to talk to the niece or great granddaughter. And so a lot would turn into these really cool oral histories. I would transcribe it. In a lot of cases, send it back to the family to review if they requested that, and then write a summary of it. And then the actual story that is featured in the book, each family would review it, make sure I got the details correct. And then, you know, of course, making the recipe itself. I made every recipe very incorrectly the first few times, whether it was learning how to make ice cream or fudge or what a spritz cookie is. And so that was a really fun process too.
And there was at least one case where you were meeting with a family and also got to be in that woman's kitchen. So that must have been sort of a special experience for you.
Oh my gosh, that was the best day ever. I'm guessing we're talking about Peggy Neals. She resides in Arkansas and is still alive. Three of the women featured in the book are actually still living, and they put up their gravestones as a part of pre-planning, which is pretty normal, especially if you're, you know, in an area where either your spouse has passed away or you're running out of space in your local cemetery. And so in the case of Peggy, her husband passed away. They were putting up their memorials together. They have a shared stone. And when she was prepping for hers so that her kids wouldn't have to worry about it, she was thinking of, what do I want to be remembered for? And she was like, I'm pretty darn proud of these cookies. And so I had a phone call with Peggy a few years ago at this point, but while I was starting to travel around and visit each cemetery and document, I was like, I'll be in the area, you know, within 4 hours of her area. Would you like to meet up? And she was like, sure, come by. Let's make some cookies. She invited all of her friends and family. So it was like a whole gathering of people. And some of the people who were even there, they didn't care that some, you know, random TikToker was in town. They just heard Peggy was making her cookies and they will show up anytime Peggy's making these cookies. And it was so fun. We also visited her cemetery afterwards. We brought the cookies with us. We visited her husband. He has a very lovely memorial on the other side of her gravestone. Yeah, it was such a special occasion.
What struck me is I never thought of this before about leaving recipes, but it's true that we have a lot of memories tied with food. Or remember that Aunt so-and-so had, like you said, special cookies or whatever that food might be. So having that on a gravestone is just a special way to remember that person and then a way to share that recipe and those memories with future generations.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I think I'd never really thought about how close food and memory are tied together. And when I was starting this project, both of my grandmothers passed away and I was at each of their funerals. And we were, of course, telling stories and sharing videos and photos. But it wasn't until we were eating the food that they had made for us, that we had all made, that we were really connecting with their memory. Like I just felt like my senses were really dropping into each time I was in their kitchen as a kid, every time they made me my birthday cake every year, all the holidays. And it just brings them a lot, that their memory and everything so much closer to the surface. And I was realizing that as other people were sharing too, whether on TikTok or Instagram or just sending me messages, like I make my cookies or I make this dish to remember my lost loved one. And it's so beautiful. Food is just so powerful like that.
Well, and you point out in the first part of the book that there is an American tradition of picnicking in graveyards. Tell us a bit about it.
Oh, yeah, that was so interesting, especially when I think of now, like, you know, there's such a taboo around going to cemeteries in some cases, or, you know, people are uncomfortable. I knew friends who like hold their breath when they drive past a cemetery. But yeah, in the early days, technically in the U.S., cemeteries were our first national public parks. So before we had designated public parks, we had these big green spaces. They were a little bit inspired by this movement of getting out of the city, and these like large rural cemeteries were starting to develop. Mount Auburn was one of the first big ones people might be familiar with. And they were these big sprawling spaces. They had art. People would go and picnic for the weekend. They would be with their loved one. They, in some cases, you can still see tabletop gravestones, which is intended to be a gravestone you would actually picnic on, which is such a strange concept nowadays. But at the time, it was very much an invitation for people to go and spend time at the grave and bring food and just spend all day there. And I do feel like they're starting, I'm seeing some cemeteries that's starting to come back a little bit more, whether it's picnicking or a movie night. And obviously you still want to be like respectful, but it's just more about spending that quality time. And I just think it's so lovely as a way to keep remembering people.
Well, there are many fascinating stories in this book, but I'm a native Kansan. So I was drawn to the story of Sharon Edwards. Tell us about her.
Yeah, Sharon K. Edwards, she sounded so awesome. I talked with her son and it was really beautiful learning her story. I believe I first heard about her because someone had come across her gravestone in the area and they had just had basically sent me a message being like, hey, I know you, you're into this thing. I just happened to walk past this person. And so her gravestone itself, it's her French silk pie, which coincidentally enough is my family's shared recipe. We called it a chocolate pie when I was a kid. And it's basically this really, really good chocolate pie that you would make. You can make the homemade crust together. And I don't know, there was just something about it that I found so special. She was a nurse. She was just like this very ragtag person involved with so many things. She loved singing. And her family talked about, her son is actually now a musician, and he said he was very much inspired by his mom, who loved music.
Could you share one or two other stories that, I mean, I realize it's difficult because they're all wonderful, I'm sure, to you, but yeah. Maybe one or two stories about some really special people or special recipes you'll find in the book?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's so true. They're all so special and they're all different, but they definitely seem to have these unifying you know, traits of being community centers. A lot of them were the people who would host holidays every year. One woman in particular who I just love her story, her name's Annabelle, and she has a snickerdoodle cookie recipe. And Annabelle was very, again, community oriented. She volunteered with a lot of places and was a volunteer firefighter, which is particularly important. She's from Northern California that has a lot of forest fire issues. And she would make these cookies. Her daughter talks about waking up in the middle of the night and all the volunteer forest fighters would be in her kitchen eating these cookies to then go out and fight fires in California, which I just really love that. And some of these families as well have really interesting connections between one another. So, you know, this one family in California, born and raised there, but in the case of Annabelle, she went to Nome, Alaska quite a lot. I think she went like 40 times in her life, which is a ton of times to go up to Alaska. And there's another woman named Bonnie who's buried in Nome, Alaska, who also has a gravestone recipe. And in the case of Bonnie, she was from the lower 48, drove up with a girlfriend, you know, in her 20s, fell in love, got married, moved to Nome, had a couple of kids, eventually became a single mom. And she has this recipe on her gravestone that now that I've like visited Nome, I have so much more appreciation for these no-bake cookies, which are very shelf-stable, but they were also, you know, in Nome, everything has to be flown in. Everything is very difficult to like get each ingredient. And so these were ingredients that she was able to access in the grocery store. They would sit on her shelf for a long time. Everything got reused. And so she would often use these Cool Whip containers to keep the cookies in. Just because, again, everything gets reused. A Cool Whip container gets reused as a Tupperware container. So it has her no-bake cookies on her gravestone. And then underneath that, a marker of a Cool Whip container as just a nod to someone who was very resourceful.
Well, there are so many stories here. Beyond just the history and the recipes itself, what's sort of the takeaway in terms of what it means to memorialize someone in this way?
I think for me, when I was learning in the project and even from the very start of it, I was, you know, I think I'd been familiar with like death and memorial as just like name, date, mother, father, maybe a spiritual quote, which again, for some people, that's really meaningful and, you know, that's amazing. And then for other folks, they want to be remembered in different ways, whether it's playing a particular song at your funeral or one family in particular, which I love is you know, this idea of like, look for me in this thing when I'm gone, for the mom who has her biscuits recipe is in here. But she said, look for me when you see a white feather. So every time her daughter sees a white feather, she thinks of her mom. So like, there's just so many different ways that you can be remembered by your loved ones. So it could be a recipe, it could be something else. And I just really love that. It's more of a celebration of life rather than just, you know, experiencing grief and not knowing how to talk about it.
To learn more, the book is To Die For, a cookbook of gravestone recipes by Rosie Grant. Rosie, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was lovely.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.